Does everybody have the text? Do you want? There's text back there, I think, aren't there? Maybe someone can reach one and give it to. They're not there? You know what we're working on? We're still working on the Digha Nikaya, and you have.
We're just locked.
I know. No, we're finished. We went right through the book. We're just going through the introduction for the second time, you know. Believe that. There's this house next to me in Didsbury.
I told him to bring it. I said, just bring the book, because he got one of those.
Oh, have you got this?
Yeah, we got that one.
Well, you've read it all then. We're almost finished the introduction. We're very close. To, as far as I know, we're on 47, aren't we? 46, 47?
Oh, yeah, 47, yeah.
I think we just went through again part of the rebirth and the sixth sense spheres, the three sense, sixth sense door sphere, three sense door sphere, and one sense door sphere. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Not. Two
page,
more here.
What page?
Page 47. There should be a few of them there. Is the 10 Mars of Sila there, too, by any chance? Because we're going to be referring to that. Do you remember we referred to that last time? Yeah. So you usually do a little review, you know, which often takes a lot of time. So do you have any, Morris, you need one? Did you find one for Morris by any chance? Goody.
Okay.
Okay.
Morris, you can take this one off for which one.
Excellent. Page 47. That's what I remember that way, where we were, is that right?
Yeah, the fourth right now. Because I know we got it this over the tradition.
So we have covered in terms of the part about rebirth the three kinds of action that are defined specifically in Buddhism. I don't know if you remember me talking about that last time. There are three kinds of action in all the schools of Buddhism, in the Tibetan and in the Vajrayana, wherever it is. Those three kinds are called the lesser, the middling, and the greater path. Greater being's path, right? And they're defined slightly differently, but it's basically the same thing. The lesser path is basically somebody who is really intent on developing safety in this life. Is that clear? In the Theravadin tradition, it would be someone who is totally caught in ignorance, someone whose life is based on reacting. That their whole life is a reaction to the environment, that they cannot perceive cause and effect, for example. Does that make sense? Is that any question there? Is that clear? So the middle, did you follow that? Is that good, Daisy?
Yeah. You're talking about like lesser vehicle being Theravadin.
In the Theravadin, they would call that someone who is totally caught in ignorance, right?
they themselves would say that?
The Theravadins would basically, that would be their definition, as a, someone who is subject to ignorance, who is unaware, totally unaware. That is, they're continuously reactive rather than choiceful, rather than practicing awareness. That would be that they don't have the capacity, the intelligence, the capacity to discern cause and effect, and so therefore their choices are always after the fact. They're reacting to things rather than planning. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And so that would basically be the approach in those two. I'm just going to work with the two schools because that's good enough. Is that okay? Yeah. Just Theravada and Tibetan Vajrayana. The middle school is basically the understanding that mind is the forerunner of all conditions. Mind is chief, and they are mind made. If one does good, good follows one. Mind is the forerunner of all conditions. Mind is chief, and they are mind made. If one does evil, evil follows one. The twin verses that start the Dhammapada, which very beautiful set of verses that is sort of a nice little summary of the teaching of Buddhism. A very beautiful verses, and that's the first two verses. I left out the last line, but that's okay. So when one can discern that it's more pleasant doing good than not doing good, that you don't like how you feel when you don't do good, and you don't like living in a society where generally most people are not doing good. Is that clear? That you really don't believe that your greatest goal is safety, or to escape from the danger that you suddenly see, or grab the thing, greedy thing that you suddenly want, but that you're more interested in something a little more long-term, and you're reaching to do the good, to do the wholesome. That's the middle path. And in the Tibetan tradition, the middle path would be described as one who knows that safety is not possible in this world. And so their actions are no longer motivated by trying to establish a place. They do tend, however, it's the middle path because there is a tendency, however, to assume that if you're doing good, then you will have good happen to you. There have been twice in the years since I started teaching where I have experienced a total change in the support group, in the people that have been interested in me. The first time happened when I quit wearing robes when I taught. And that was very shocking to a lot of people because it was much better to have me as someone who didn't come to their parties. That was very comfortable for them, to go to someone and talk to them and then have their life separate from that. And so a whole group of people stopped relating to me, and another whole group of people began to relate to me. But that was very interesting to me. I'm not talking about numbers, I'm just talking about how interesting that was. You know, you can feel when somebody suddenly doesn't want to talk to you, this wall goes up. And the second time, where I really felt a major shift in who was willing to relate to me and who was not. Not talking about my merit, I'm just talking about these are like sort of unconscious views that we all have, and when I actually can see it, I can find it in myself as well, is when it was perceived that I was having an extremely difficult time, and how could I be doing that? Or as one person at that same time said to me, somehow makes you wonder, though, eh? What are you what have you done that this is happening to you? Interesting. As if safety were possible. Interesting.
Well, I always remind myself, actually, Rinpoche said this at one time, they killed Christ.
Yeah.
Look what happened to the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee.
As if safety were possible. Because even when you're living to do the good, you know, you start to actually believe that that itself is somehow going to protect you, or your reward is going to come.
Well, because it actually, for a lot of the time, it does work.
A lot of time it does work.
Yeah.
But where it really works, is in your own heart.
Yeah.
And the result of doing good is immediate, here, not up there, here. You change. You become unlimited. When you practice generosity, you have created an infinite mind state. You've opened all the walls. And so that's the third level. The third level is the power is now. Third level of action. Now, all three of those levels, they can perform the same act, but will have very different vipaka. Won't it? Perform the same act for the sake of safety, perform the same act for the sake of generosity, perform the same act for the sake of the infinite, of beyond self. But the result will be totally different, because the expectation, the projection, the desire, the emotional attachment. Is that interesting to you? So that's basically what we covered, right, when we talked about the different realms of rebirth. I'm just summing it up a different way here. We find that over and over in all the schools of Buddhism, like those three types of action. The third way in the Theravada, and I should add this, is called the Eightfold Path. The Eightfold Path is considered to be the ladder straight out. the first level of action is just reactive, it's just wandering in samsara. The second one is the practice of good activity that is like creating the circumstances so that one will be able to hear the third level, which is the Eightfold Path.
Well, isn't the practice of generosity is one of the is part of the Eightfold Path. When people are practicing their second level, they've kind of got their fingers on the bottom rung, so to speak.
Practice of Sila, the Eightfold Path. Is it?
Well.
Review, right thought.
Well, under right livelihood.
Right action.
Right action. Often people who are practicing generosity are working on think right action and right livelihood.
Yeah, you could say that. I think loosely you would say that. That certainly is what happens when you practice right action and right livelihood, is you develop sila. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, I'm just thinking, I've heard Rinpoche categorize the Eightfold Path into sila, samadhi, and panya.
And panya?
Yeah.
Yeah. With right view and right thought being panya.
Yeah. And the sila part being action.
Right speech, right action, right livelihood.
So the practice of ethics.
Yeah. Now, when I'm blanking out because I've forgotten one of the Eightfold Path. What is it? Right speech? Right action, right livelihood. What?
Concentration.
Effort.
Right, effort. Yeah. Right, effort. Yeah. And right effort would be very much like. And then right awareness and right concentration. Mm-hmm. How many have I got? Six. Have you read that? Right. Four in the center and two at the end, right? Right, have you read that? Okay, what's the 8-point bath?
Write them down.
Well, I feel much better now.
I need a monochrome.
Not just me.
It's got to be in here somewhere. Where is the band index when you need it?
Come on. There's right understanding.
32.
Right understanding.
You right understanding.
Page 32,
right,
Cecily.
Right
page 32, thank you.
Right understanding.
The beginning, the introduction.
Right.
Oh, there we go. That's right. Right view, right intention, right thought is where it's usually. Right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort. Right. Right mindfulness and right mindfulness concentration. So right view, right thought are considered to be panya or wisdom training.
Yeah,
and right speech, right action, right livelihood and right effort are considered to be sila, and right mindfulness and right concentration are considered to be samadhi or the total peaceful mind in.
Although you could put right effort in there too, I suppose. Well, no, I guess if you need the effort and the ethics, then the samadhi comes. Strength is pretty non-regret.
Is there a difference in intention between the second and the third? So, not in the equal path, but, you know, different between generosity as opposed to, you know, and that has some of the Eightfold Path in it, but in the Eightfold Path, the whole intention is to do the Eightfold Path. Is that a difference?
If you actually look at those words, not in English, mm-hmm. but in Pali, and read the suttas where the Buddha talked about them, they're very specific. Right view actually means the Four Noble Truths. Mm-hmm. That's actually what it means.
Yeah,
it actually means the view aware of the Four Noble Truths. Right thought actually means non-lust, non-hatred, non-delusion. That's what it means. That means those things are absent. So it's not easy to talk about these without that. Right speech is in here, 10 marks of sila. Right speech is in the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh of them. That's the definition of right speech. Of the 10 marks of sila. So that's like, first of all, not lying, and then the second one is not demonizing, and I think the third one is not axing, using speech like a hatchet or axing, and then the last one is, I love the last one, from the word pollard, you know, from like not dead speech. Not speech that takes the life out, not castrated speech. Speech without germ. It's beautiful, isn't it? So those are the things, those have to do right speech. I don't remember precisely right action, right livelihood. I've got them confused. In my mind. Right mindfulness is fascinating. Right mindfulness, the seventh one, has 5 points, and according to the Buddha, only a Buddha could do the last one. The first one is when you are aware that you like something, immediately find something about it that you could dislike. Just note something about it that you could dislike. Second point is when you're aware that you dislike something, immediately note something within it that you could like. Third one is develop the dislike in the object you like to the same degree so that you can hold either like or dislike equally. Fourth one is develop like in the object you dislike so that you could, to the same degree, without more weight for either one, hold either of them equally. And the fifth one is hold both views in the mind at the same time, which according to the Buddha, only a Buddha could do. So that's what a right mindfulness would develop into, where you could have actual discrimination, where you would not be involved with judgment, where you would actually see something and you could see all its positive qualities and all its negative qualities and not be moved by any of it.
So that's like seeing the pleasant for the pleasant, or knowing the pleasant for the pleasant and the unpleasant for the unpleasant.
Yeah, wouldn't that be it? Yeah. And so, you know, that's and right concentration is basically suchness. So those would be experienced in that they're classified as samadhi, because they would be experienced at the moment of attainment of wisdom and compassion,
yeah,
being able to see things evenly, and then the next moment, the consciousness, or moment of path, or whatever you want to call it, and the next moment, the consciousness comes back into name and form. So it's knowing again. So a right view and right thought have to do with panya. Samadhi in its highest meaning is why that would be classified like sila samadhi and panya. Because the samadhi for the 7 and 8 would be the samadhi of attainment. But now you see why it takes me so long to get through the introduction. I'm just kidding.
Because you can take this Eightfold Noble Path and use it, though. I mean, it says sama, right? So it's totality.
Yeah.
But you can, ordinary beings can take it and use it as a guide to develop the development of sila samadhi and
exactly. Exactly. And that's the point. And that's the three levels, and that's also the three levels of action that I'm talking about,
yeah,
that create rebirth.
Yeah.
Is like what you do when you understand that there are three levels of action, that sometimes you're just reacting to things, sometimes you're choosing to do good, and sometimes you're acting with power in the moment, is that you can increase your awareness of how to act with power in the moment, and that's the Eightfold Path. That is the Eightfold Path. Be aware. For example, spend a week being aware of the Four Noble Truths. Like, be aware of them for a week. And that's right view.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's right view. And that's the training in right view. And when it actually rings the bell, then it is already transcendent.
Yeah.
And so it's a training and it's transcendence. It's both the path and the result in one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what actions of power are. You know, someone who performs actions of power, the action and the path and the result are together. They're not separate. The path goes right to the result.
Seems to be a sense of the individual going through those stages coming to a dropping, a continual dropping of narrow identity. You enlarge your identity so that you see that there's nothing you can really fundamentally do to save somebody or to help them because you don't have enough knowledge or skill. So for the sake of getting down to it, the only way out is to face your own lack of development. And because you see that it's the only way to go.
I think that for whatever main motive, whether some people are doing it that way or because they're pretending they don't have much knowledge and so they think they have none to share, whether people are sharing too much because they don't want to see what they don't have, or people aren't sharing enough because they don't want to see what they do have, for whatever reason, it is, you're, again, that's exactly right on. It comes down to being honest and then realizing that there's nothing else worth doing in this life. There is no other way to go, as you're saying. And that's exactly it. That's exactly it. You have to decide that honesty is essential because your life is valuable. So therefore, you want to be honest. And then you practice the path because there's no other way to go. Nothing else has any particular attraction. I totally agree. Can we go on with this? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, we think we can. I'm just ask a question.
So yeah.
How did they come late? So the power of action is the third. So I'm just pondering that. I've got a sense of the first and the second.
Yeah, power because it cuts through rebirth. The first one is still involved with time, but it's reactive. It's like looking over your shoulder and so you don't see where you're running. Mm-hmm. The second one is seeing where you're running, but sometimes what you see isn't really where you're running to. Something will interfere. So you're still doing it, like practicing good or whatever, mm-hmm. thinking that there's a reward in the people you admire or that you feel are worthy of learning from. If something, I remember someone saying to me one time, you know, well, I think Namgyal Rinpoche is a very good teacher, but he can't be enlightened because he wears glasses. And I didn't laugh because I could see exactly what that person was talking about. That person is talking exactly about, well, how could the Karmapa be the Karmapa if he got cancer? Like, I'm doing this because I want to make the world a better place so these things don't happen. And I know when I'm doing things right because these bad things don't happen. How many of you can stay in a circumstance that you really don't like, that you feel is unfulfilling, and practice Dharma with your full hearts? Can I see a show of hands?
I've done it occasionally.
I'm not talking about occasionally. So every one of us also does that. And when we cannot take the circumstance and use it for power, regardless of what it is, the power to move beyond conditioned reactions. We've all done all three of those paths. And it's very easy to look at those three paths and say, oh, well, I'm not someone who's reactive. Well, not in your mind, not in my mind. And when I'm not reactive, I'm not in my right mind. You know? I'm still reactive. Those seeds of karma do ripen. I do not think the Buddha never felt anger. I think he knew how to ride it. That makes him much more powerful. There was a time where I used to think that the Buddha was, you know, like a brass Buddha Rupa. And that was my aspiration. You know. past the anesthetic, I'm having a feeling. But that seems too simplistic and without compassion to me.
Well, it's interesting that, I've been reading some of the Dalai Lama's books, and he talks about feeling anger or feeling frustration or whatever, and it certainly comes across that quality of just being able to
ride it rather than it riding you.
Yeah, so that it happens and then it goes and then it stops.
And that image of riding it rather than it riding me, for me, was the turning point. When I suddenly realized what a power it was, and I was being dragged, and I had an object only in my mind, and I was looking for evidence, and to actually get, it's a very addictive state, isn't it, when you have a view? Isn't it, when you have a view? Mm-hmm. It's a very addictive state. The very big hit of I in there. Mm-hmm. And we do not give up our I easily, do we?
I don't think so. Do you?
So all three of these ways of action are present in each of us every day. Or the potential for them is. And no matter who, the potential for all three are there. But when the consciousness is no longer caught by them, triggered by them, then that's called liberated. Because the propensities of all activity to now from the very no beginning are present in every living being. Those who are liberated from being subject to those propensities are called awakened. And how do they do that? That's power. That's making the statement, Four Noble Truths. Every time something is dissatisfactory, say, oh yes, there is dissatisfactoriness. Gee, I'd forgotten. Things were so nice there for a moment. But it just is. It just is. There is dissatisfactoriness. And I don't like it. And there is like and dislike. And that has a great deal to do with the cause for dissatisfactoriness. You know? And actually examine one's life from the basis of the Four Noble Truths, that cuts through very quickly a lot of those views of reaction, or say, you know, a good place, I'm going to do good. You know, when I was really, really interested in doing good at one time, it was just so obnoxious that so few people wanted to receive it from me.
Didn't they know?
I mean, what's wrong with them? Do I need to spell it out? Watch my lips. I want to give to you. Take. Of course, none of you have ever experienced that, I'm sure, so we won't go there. Do show and tell obsessively all the time. You got your own family album, don't you, with your own photographs? Don't
yes.
And how hurt we can be. Oh no, that's not, we're not going there, right. That's right. So, on page 46 there, you see, now we're back at the text here. Good, isn't that wonderful? The three broad realms. In page 46, the Buddhist cosmos is divided into three broad realms. The next paragraph goes the sense sphere realm, and it talks about all the different lifetime births that are there, right? Desire realm. And those are basically either reactive or driven by desire for goodness. And the next destinations, oh no, not, they don't, the animal, ghost, titans. Titans are driven by goodness, and they get caught in jealousy because they think they deserve a result. So that would be true, what I just said. And then the good destinations in the sense sphere realm, page 46 at the bottom, that would again be reactive, but not so much reactive, much more driven by kindness, driven by a desire for kindness. Not so much the safety motif, you know, the reactive motif, but more the kindness one. And also the focusing on prayer, any experience of jhana is what any experience of jhana is what would be called Garuka Karma. Remember, Garuka Karma? Its translation of that is usually a heavy action, and it marks the rebirth. So any experience of jhana creates in anybody who has concentrated somewhere on something that was extremely beautiful, like the night sky or falling trees, or I had a friend one time who could clearly remember the rebirth linking consciousness from a previous lifetime was that lying in on the side of a road bleeding and looking at the stars, the night stars. Dennis Oakland, remember Dennis Oakland? And looking at the night stars and just being absolutely falling into a state of jhana from the night stars, and that was the rebirth thinking consciousness. Interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. So he said that the memory included being extremely angry and feeling betrayed and really pissed off, and just the sense of that familiarness of that was the familiar angry mind. But then this moment of looking at the night stars and the mind going into jhana. So jhana is called a heavy action. A heavy action influences rebirth. Murder is a heavy action. Jhana is a heavy action. So murder would influence rebirth to being very paranoid and split off, and so therefore a hell state, you know, if you feel like you have to get rid of part of the world to such a degree that you actually create such a, you know, change in the flow of prana, then that's going to cause you to, you know, that creates the seeds, not you, but creates the seeds for a state that is continuously feeling like it's going to be Sako, anyway. And so also jhana would create, then the consciousness would advert to that at rebirth and either have a human, if it was very, consciousness was very difficult, it had a lot of difficult states, still that jhanic episode would overrule the difficult states, and so there would be a lifetime where that would be one of the ruling factors. It's interesting, isn't it?
Having a peak experience.
Yeah, it's exactly. That's exactly it. Garuka karma, a heavy action or a peak experience, a strong experience that moves beyond the ordinary experiences. So anybody who's done a lot of prayer or meditation or focus and that, then that's probably going to rule the death rebirth that occurs. So still not involved with a powerful action. We're still within the realm of those, you know, those three kinds of actions, but not powerful yet. The third kind of action in the Tibetan is actually not the powerful action. It is the large scope being, and they do believe that the powerful action is possible, but they don't believe that it's possible for anyone other than themselves. So they are called in the Tibetan, I love this, Savakas or Shravakas. Savaka, which means the hearers in the Theravada. They hear the teaching. They believe it, but they don't make it something that is to be practiced for all beings. Interesting, isn't it? I think it's interesting anyway. Maybe you don't. I find it very interesting. I love those little, finesses. So like the third level being can be practicing the Eightfold Path but not have a big enough heart for compassion to actually move beyond rebirth. And in which case they would end up in the God realms, which is on page 47. Fine material realms, the grosser types of matter are absent.
In the Torch of Certainty, they talk about the Saroka Buddhas and the Pacheka Buddhas.
Yeah.
So they've moved.
They have attained liberation, but they have not attained full compassion. So they're just hovering.
Hovering?
On the edge of totality mind.
Of Sammasambuddha?
Of Sammasambuddha,
mm-hmm.
Which is the aim. Okay. So they are their knowledge is undeniable. Their compassion is to be developed, and so they will spend lifetimes developing the compassion. They say that Pacheka Buddhists will spend some time developing awareness of Paticca Samuppada, and I love this stuff. And the Sravakas will spend lifetimes developing awareness of the Four Noble Truths and Paticca Samuppada.
So why are they called Buddhas then?
Because they have the intellectual attainment, there is no question. They clearly see, but they don't. But it isn't large enough. It doesn't include, it is not the totality consciousness awakening. It's one cell of your body, totally liberated. But the message has to pass through the whole body. Or maybe your arm and three quarters of your nose and one eighth of one of your toenails, but it's got to spread.
Well,
does that image give it?
Not exactly, but I think it's kind of beyond analogies. But
it is.
It mentions in that text that those beings do not come back to teach.
Sravakas and Pacheka Buddhas, by definition, would not come back to teach because they haven't perfected compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's them awakening,
mm.
not the universe seeing itself.
Well, I mean, at some level, I just have, because it seems to me they would just kind of pop out, like just kind of blink out in terms of existence as entities.
And in the Theravadan tradition, that's exactly when Achan Cha died, one of his close students, who I knew when I was in Thailand, actually came to Thailand and stayed in the monastery I was at when he first came to Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
We were having tea, and he said to me that many people were talking about, Achan Cha being reborn. And he said, but no, I mean, we know that. He did exactly what you just did.
Mm.
And that is basically the Theravadan belief. If someone is an arhat,
gone.
That is not the Vajrayana belief.
Yeah.
Vajrayana belief is, okay, now you got the view, now develop the compassion.
Yeah.
The Vajrayana belief is there is no such thing as separation from totality. So one part can't blink out because that's separate from totality. It's curious, isn't it?
Well, they have that in the text, though. I think it's called forth upon the body of form. Have you heard that phrase in some of the Tibetan texts? That a certain deity or whatever was called forth upon the body of form.
And yeah.
It has that quality that the when the bodhisattva promise is programmed into the being, which NR, I believe, has said has to happen before awakening, that programming has to be there. And he said that it's sealed when you start helping people in the dream, if you have dreams of helping people. So it's, I'm getting this sense that if a being didn't have that adetana programmed in, but had the insight, then
they're Pacheka Buddha, or
they would not be called forth upon the body of form. They would, or like no one would call them, and they would not respond if called. There'd be no forming. It has that kind of quality to it.
Which is why their needs, and that why in the Tibetan they say that the Pacheka Buddhas and the Sharwakas are hanging out
yeah.
in some sort of like a purgatory kind of
maybe
place.
The electricity
yeah.
in the universe.
And at some point or other they begin to have a sense that, you know, of compassion begins to stir in them, and they begin to become more involved. You know, when the Buddha gave the discourse, had the insight into the dependent origination.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what he did just before he had that insight?
No.
He looked within, and he explored within his own being 100,000. Coming into being, some passing
mm-hmm.
away. 100,000, traced them. Saw cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. 100,000. Then he looked outside. Texts vary at the number. My favorite number is 100,000. At 100,000 beings, and each of them, he also explored 100,000 coming into being and passing away. That is, he extended the awareness to a whole beyond self, a whole tapestry of coming into being and passing away, but a tapestry in every dimension. And at that point, understood dependent origination. So Pracheka Buddhas study dependent origination at some point, at which point they could be called into the body of form because it's all the same thing to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Does that? Is everybody finding this interesting? Or are you anxious to get back to the text? Because, you know, I can go on like this. You know. I love this. Yes.
All religions say that you must have open your heart.
Yes.
And Buddhism has stressed that too.
Yeah.
And the mind is raised to mind. However, the first time that we know of, you can have heart transplants. And they're taken from several people, one girl, a 7-year-old girl, had a 10-year-old heart transplanted. She saw the man who murdered the 10-year-old. The priest checked it out and it was true, and he was the victim. Another case where the child took on all the food requirements, study material of the one who had volunteered. volunteered the heart. And the heart is about 100 times greater than magnetic, electromagnetic energy than the brain. It's coming to view a kind of a theory or a view that the brain is a switchboard. You haven't got all the fields of energy around the brain. But the heart in meditation is taking in air with molecules in it that have been all over the universe.
And Maurice, this is beautiful, but it isn't really applying to Pratyeka Buddhas and...
No, what I'm saying is business of they have to develop that. We're in a position of taking into account the heart.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, the view versus the compassion.
In your meditation, you're taking oxygen.
Yeah.
More than oxygen, it's been all around the universe.
Yeah, it's true. And every cell in our body is made from stars.
So you start to see where they've been.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Once you start to see where they've been. Exactly.
Well,
Paticca Samuppada. Yeah, yeah. Once you've seen where you've been, where everything has been, where it non-you has been. Exactly. Then there is no liberation or non-liberation.
It's interesting that some of this view is going to start to come through from the heart.
Yeah, I think science is really very fascinating these days. But I wanted, can we do this, darling? You know, I'm at least one paragraph, guys. I mean, no, I just at I am just where we stopped. We stopped. Did we stop after the fine material paragraph? I think we did. Hmm?
Also, you just still just finished.
I was just doing a review. You can see why it takes.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, we're gonna go. We're gonna race through. We sort of done that. We did the fine material realm last time. Do you remember that? You talked about all the different God realms, right? And we didn't do the third realm, did we? Or am I remembering wrong? I think we did the fine material realm. Do you see that, page 47 in the fine material realm, the grosser types of matter are absent, remember? And then I went off on a long...
Yeah, we sort of did it, but I think what it says here, that in my notes here, that we didn't quite finish it, though.
Oh, okay, how far did we get? I mean, I have to do it again. Okay, in the fine material realm, the grosser types of matter are absent. And that's very interesting, the grosser types of matter are absent.
The word gross puts kind of a spin on it. I tend to think of it as coarser.
Either will do.
Or connect it to the senses, because what the senses that are missing are touch and smell. Right? Sight and sound are still there.
Yeah, it's like sound and mind.
Yeah.
Touch, taste, and smell are missing. And in the fine material realm, the grosser types of matter are absent, and the bliss, power, luminosity, and vitality of its denizens are far superior to those in the sense sphere realm. The fine material realm consists of 16 planes, which are the objective counterparts of the four jhanas. Attainment of the first jhana leads to rebirth among Brahma's assembly, the ministers of Brahma, and the Mahabrahmas. An attainment would have to be a bit more habitual, like more than just once in your life. You know? Just once in your life would certainly affect the rebirth linking karma. But to actually have rebirth in one of the fine material realms, there would have to be a bit of dedication to it. You wouldn't have to be ace at it. Like one of my teachers in Thailand taught jhana. And I would do retreats with her, and that's what she taught. And she was extremely good teacher, and she could teach people, okay, now you go into third jhana, and the person would sit there, and within the count of 10, they'd be in third jhana, you know? I never got that good, but I could actually distinguish and move between the different formless jhanas from doing work with her. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Those kind of beings, that would have quite an effect on rebirth linking karma. And for my sins, I'm trying to make sure if I go there, I have a copy of the beginning under my arm. Just too addictive a personality. It's not safe for me. Ministers of Brahma, Mahabrahmas, according to whether it is developed to an inferior, middling, or superior degree. She taught jhana to be able to use it with insight. She was a really good teacher.
You mean to clear the consciousness of hindrances?
No, to use it with insight. The consciousness is clear when you go into jhana. And then as soon as you came out, she taught you to, you had to immediately apply insight.
Well, that's
insight
what, that's
questions.
What I mean, so that the jhanas would clear the consciousness so the insights could be seen very...
Yeah, the insight, readily. Then insight is applied.
Yeah.
Not seen, applied. Yeah, very specific questions, like... But that's...
Just give one little sample of what kind of question she would ask, Cecily.
Review the impermanence.
Okay.
And then you train your mind to review the impermanence of all the different aspects of jhana.
Okay.
And it's very interesting. It's very interesting. So insight questions are very specific, and the jhana is very specific. And it's a very, you know, it's a, like
it
the Theravada.
It would be very effective.
Yeah. And you know who writes it really well? It's Kema, Aya Kema. She's a Westerner who, that was her path, and she was a great teacher in the West, and she has several books.
Yes.
Who is the Self is one that is written from her being on retreat with some people, and she is basically outlining the way this teacher that I have been taught in Thailand. Really worthy book.
Do you
read
that in your story? Who is the Self? Again,
is a really worthy book.
Yeah, it was this.
Really worthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's still I.
You've looked.
No, I read I'd Rather Going Nowhere, Being Somebody. Or,
yeah.
No, I read that one, but not the other
one. Yeah. Anyway, so now, see, once more distracted. Come on. Now I've lost my place.
Baka de Brahma.
Yeah, Baka de Brahma. Or Brahma Samatha.
Seem to be, Seem to be residents of the last name plane.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where we are?
Who are they when they're at home?
Baka the Brahma. They are people. They are often referred to in the sutras, in the teachings. So if when you say when the Buddha will be talking about even Baka the Brahma will experience such and such, then that's what they're talking about. He was a being who had very fine virtue and very good concentration, and like that, you know? The sutras mention, so this is, if you were had read lots of Buddhism, you would have run into their names, and so this is just saying, yeah, that's where they live.
Mm.
Here's their address. Didsbury. The sutras mention especially the divine abodes as the path to the company of Brahma. Attainment, see that Brahma there, it has a, oh they all do, better not say that then. Okay. Attainment of the second jhana in the same 3 degrees leads respectively to rebirth among the gods of limited radiance, of immeasurable radiance, and of streaming radiance. So a few times, you know, being able to attain jhana, but not to sustain it or go past, you know, first or second would be limited and so forth. That would be the result. That's the power of consciousness. The third jhana, to rebirth among the gods of limited glory, of immeasurable glory, and of refulgent glory. The fourth jhana ordinarily leads to rebirth among the gods of great fruit, but if it is developed with a desire to attain an insentient mode of existence, so you can see how motive is important with jhana, which is why jhana was used with insight. But if it is developed with the desire to attain an insentient mode of existence, it will conduce to rebirth among the non-percipient beings for whom consciousness is temporarily suspended.
So who are they?
Sort of like beings in a spiritual coma. Limbo. A lot of, some of the people I know, a couple of people who did manage to commit suicide, and others who have tried that I know, their sense of wanting to die was so that there would be nothing. If they had attained fourth jhana with that desire, they would have some success. But if you kill yourself with that desire, it's not going to be successful. Oh, for whom consciousness is temporarily suspended, there you go. That's the answer to your question. The fine material realm also contains 5 special planes that are exclusively for the rebirth of non-returners. These are the pure abodes. So the Aviha, called the Atapa, the Sudasa, the Sudasi, and the Akanita. In each of these planes, in the fine material realm, the lifespan is said to be of enormous duration and to increase significantly in each higher plane.
But these rebirths in these planes don't sound like it's very desirable.
These are all basically very desirable in terms of pleasure. Many of these planes, with the exceptions of the last part there that the introduction points to, however, are not permanent. And so, therefore, when the power to hold the consciousness in that realm runs out, then that's a great shock, because it lasts a very long time and it feels so unencumbered that when that is not, as if that is, oneself is not different from one's environment, that's what I mean by unencumbered. There isn't the coarseness of the material, so it's like a thought is not that different from achieving the result of the thought, you know. So there's this sense that this is the natural way that things work, and that I am not separate from this way of working, so that when the consciousness moves out of that sphere, it is a very great shock. With the exception of the ones where the motive is to use it for Dharma, then you can have an existence where the mind is extremely clear, but the question is also extremely clear. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, these states are all right to go to, but one wants to have, as Christine said earlier, start by taking the vow that one wishes to attain liberation, and particularly in the school that we work with, for the benefit of all beings. So that regardless of where consciousness is reborn, that desire to be involved with the study and practice of Dharma and for the benefit of all beings has become so much a part of the motive of the being that there's no way that that could not bring fruit. But without that kind of focus, yeah.
All kind of theme song and a melody going of what can I do with this for all beings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a theme tune going next to the making of the being.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it from being swallowed up.
Mm-hmm.
For self-programmed in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Because if you're doing something not for the benefit of all beings, then there is still a subject and an object. You're still going to be expecting certain results to come. And when they don't come, then you're going to fall into reactive behavior. And when you fall into reactive behavior, you're caught in samsara again, without any view. I think that would be safe to say. Yeah. So now we have completed to where we finished last time, from my opinion. From your opinion, we didn't get that far. We only got through half that paragraph. So now we're actually going to plunge ahead into new ground. We still got 15 minutes. It's truly wonderful, isn't it?
Wasting time.
I know. Sorry. Get right to it here. The third realm of okay, I'm not going to waste anything. Third realm of being is the immaterial realm, where matters become non-existent, only mental processes exist. This realm consists of four planes, which are the objective counterparts, the four immaterial meditative attainments from which they result and whose names they share. The faces of infinite space, infinite consciousness, nothingness, and neither perception nor non-perception. Lifespans ascribed to them are respectively 20,000, 40,000, 60,000, 84,000 great aeons. In Buddhist cosmology, existence in every realm being the product of a karma with a finite potency is the necessary. Any questions?
How long is the green?
Oh, God. Okay. A great aeon occurs. There are small aeons and great aeons. The small aeons are the destruction of all the material, all material form. All form. And the destruction of all form occurs through fire and through water at various times. Fire? No. Wind and water, I think. Wind and water. I'm a little rusty, but I'm trying my best here. I'll correct this next time if I haven't done this properly. So it varies, but there is more often water than wind, as far as I know. And that occurs approximately every, they say, 25,000 years is one segment of a small kalpa, and there are three segments in a small kalpa. So roughly 75,000, or you could say 100,000 years would be a small kalpa.
They're just talking about like the earth.
A small kalpa. Okay? Maybe it's 25 million, I can't remember, but some very large amount of time is a small kalpa. And that includes its coming into being, its, yeah, I've got too small a number, coming into being, its existence, and its passing away. And then there is a dissolution of that solar system or whatever, that manifest form. And so all of the life forms, all of the consciousness that has manifested in form, therefore has a rebirth into a higher realm, one of the god or demigod realms, right? And then slowly form coalesces again. And then there is another, like the form isn't totally destroyed, it just doesn't support life. And then there's another cycle. And then and then after that cycle of its three periods coming into existence, existing and passing away, then there'd be another, like an ice age, we would call it. Like this would be what happened on the earth. There was an ice age, and now this would be the middle period. Right now, this would be the middle period, and then there will be next will be the dissolution period, and it's probably going to happen in about 5,000 years. Right? It's going to start. Dissolution period, and then there's the dark period, and then there's coming into being, there's existence and passing away. I didn't tell you about the dark, there's like four actually. Okay, but I was just looking at the three. And so there are like these four periods, and each of them is about 25,000 years long. And so that cycles around, and then every once in a while, so those are called small kalpas, or small eon.
Is an eon and a kalpa the same?
Yeah, basically. And kalpa is the Pali word, or the Sanskrit word. So every once in a while, there's a great kalpa, which is a destruction by fire or by wind. In which case, all of the realms up to the fine, not just the fine material realm. The fine material realms are left with the small kalpa, but with the great eon, all the realms are destroyed right up to the immaterial realms, to the formless realms. So all consciousness then is in a formless state.
So the formless state is still there, but everything else is...
All form is totally destroyed, and then it's all resorted out again, and then... So a great kalpa happens once every... I can't remember, but there's a few small kalpas, and then a great kalpa. I'll check that and I'll let you know. Is that good?
Yeah. Okay. I sort of knew about the kalpas because I remember reading about how many there was some folklore, for the sake of a better word.
How many Buddhas appeared at Kalpa?
Yeah, so many Buddhas appeared in this, and then there were 600 Kalpas where there were no Buddhas, and then 30,000 Buddhas appeared, and then there were, and I got a sense of the immensity of the time frame in which
the Buddha is the eighth Buddha in this Kalpa.
I just got the sense of this.
Yeah, it's very interesting,
and,
isn't
and
it?
And suddenly you realize when they say all beings are your mother, you go, well, yeah. When you're talking about...
A part of the same porridge.
Period of time. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. Lovely. Okay. So you understood that part. This realm consists of four planes, which are the objective counterparts of the four immaterial meditative states. These are called the four formless jhanas, otherwise, from which they result. So they are the vipaka from those experiences. And whose names they share, the basis of infinite space or boundless space. Infinite consciousness or boundless consciousness, no thingness, and neither perception nor non-perception. So there are four levels of concentration that one can develop through meditation just by just being patient, not arguing, not saying you're good, bad, up, down, just being interested in the focus and playful with the result. Then the concentration gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and then you go into formless states where there is no sense. The consciousness becomes so refined that there is no awareness of form. And then there are four levels of that. And again, I refer you to Aya Kema. She's really wonderful to read on jhana. A modern teacher whose path was the path of jhana and insight. And really, you know, it's just so rare to find anybody in our time, because so many people are terrified of jhana. And for her, it was her path.
Why are they terrified?
I think they're afraid that they'll fall into it and never get an insight.
Well, it's certainly discouraged in Vipassana.
In a lot of it's got a bad press. It's had, you know.
I mean, Rinpoche uses it almost in the way you're describing.
Yeah.
Often, if he's working individually with students.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I do remember once, though, hearing a student who was sitting outside at an insight retreat, and a student went in and said, "Oh, please, sir, can't I have a jhana?" Nope.
So any questions up to page 48 now? So those are long lifetimes, eh?
Mm-hmm.
In those formless realms?
Yeah.
But how would you know? Because there's neither perception nor non-perception. There's no thingness.
Yeah.
I know the times that I have experienced formless jhana, I didn't know. I was just stoned. One time I went around, for one of the early times, I went around the room trying to figure out, because of my past, you know, who was burning marijuana. Because I swore I was stoned. And I'm giggling and I'm looking everywhere in the corners. What gave me the clue was that state lasted about 4 days. And I'd never been high. I had a high that lasted 4 days any other way. Other than occasional flashbacks, but we don't count them. So so then I began to perceive, oh, maybe this is one of them formless jhanas I fell into. Because you only need a split second of that level of formless jhana for the whole consciousness to be refreshed and clarified, and all the mud settles, and you're happy. But there's a clarity that isn't there with the stone or the other happy, you know. There was no lack of awareness. So I think the lifetime after that might be okay, but I don't know. What do I know? So in Buddhist cosmology, existence in every realm, being the product of a karma with a finite potency, is necessarily impermanent. Beings take rebirth in accordance with their deeds, experience the good or bad results. And then, when the generative karma has spent its force, they pass away to take rebirth elsewhere, as determined by still another karma that has found the opportunity to ripen. You can't even really say there's a they there. You can only say that there are seeds of karma finding the opportunity to ripen, now in this form, now in that form. Hence the torments of hell, as well as the bliss of heaven, no matter how long they may last, are bound to pass. For this reason, the Buddha does not locate the final goal of his teaching anywhere within the conditioned world. He guides those whose spiritual faculties are still tender to aspire for a heavenly rebirth and teaches them the lines of conduct that conduce to the fulfillment of their aspirations. But for those whose faculties are mature and who can grasp the unsatisfactory nature of everything conditioned, he urges determined effort to put an end to wandering in samsara and to reach nibbana, which transcends all planes of being.
Can you explain that one line here? For this reason, the Buddha does not locate the final goal of his teaching anywhere within the conditioned world.
Nirvana, liberation is unconditioned. It is not conditioned. It is the end of conditions, of being conditioned. So like, for example, in the Kalayana Metta Sutta, it is no more subject to rebirth, because being subject is being conditioned. When you're subject to something.
Okay. I can understand that, too.
Yeah.
So...
you're not reactive, you're not the result of past actions. The power of past actions has been broken. I found you, O Builder. For this there will be no more becoming. No more subject to becoming. Is that clear, Wayne?
So we're saying the final goal of sort of the final goal is it's not here, the conditioned world.
And the final goal is not being subject to conditioned,
okay.
To the conditioned world.
Okay, fine.
Is not blindly wandering, not being blindly subjected.
Mm-hmm.
It's liberation from conditioned states. And what would that be? That would have to be what is beyond conditioned states and only totality, but totality doesn't have a definition. If you say that word, then what's opposite of totality? Nothing.
Yes.
But what is nothing? Blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
And then you get into all those different schools of philosophical schools of Buddhism, which are truly wonderful, but we really don't want to go there. Were you saying
yes, this line about he guides those whose spiritual faculties are still tender to aspire for heavenly rebirth. Because I'm curious.
He guides them to the good. You know, if somebody is reactive, he guides them to the good.
But I've also heard that the Dewa realm, it's too happy for liberation, and that the human realm is actually better. Rebirth for liberation because there's enough suffering to drive the aspiration.
The press has it that human birth is the very best for attaining liberation.
Yeah.
Also some of the god realms.
So is that what
some of the god realms. For example, one of the realms which is said to be the realm where perception is the main focus, perception,
mm-hmm.
is the main focus, so consciousness itself, perceiving,
mm-hmm.
is the main developed faculty, freed faculty. So it's called the realm of Amitabha.
Mm-hmm.
In one of Amitabha's Pure Land realms, it is a wonderful place because it's a Dewa realm, but also you can hear Dharma.
But I understood that it was this actually the suffering of the human realm that was...
It provokes the question. And the and the pleasure gives the calm enough for the answer.
Mm-hmm.
But if the question is well provoked...
Already, then... You
then
go
if
to
you
Amitabha's
were born
pure land.
In Amitabha's pure land. So that's what it's saying here, the mm-hmm. Buddha was so skillful that he knew how to give people such provocative questioning mind and the basis for birth in a realm where they could really
answer the question.
Answer the question.
Had provoked by both. The human realm.
And one of the things I love, Ayang Rinpoche, I was having this long conversation with him about Amitabha's Pure Language. Of course, you know, I had a real Tibetan there at my beck and call. He had almost nobody at the center when I was there with him. So there was like maybe 10 of us. So. Mm. And we were talking. I was asking him all the questions I could possibly ask about Amitabha's Pure Land.
Can we invite him here?
I don't know. That would be great.
Wouldn't it be wonderful?
Yeah. I think that's, you know, the more the merrier. Anyway, so and he was telling me that some beings, you know, the story is this: that you're born out of a lotus in the pond in front of Amitabha Buddha. And you hear the teaching, you arise on this moon disc and lotus. That is to say, what supports you is the ability to have practiced right action, cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like not be caught by the, you know, the four actions. When something is wholesome, do it. When you see the opportunity for the wholesome, act, move toward it. When
mm-hmm.
something is unwholesome, don't do it. When you see the opportunity for the unwholesome, stay away from it.
Mm-hmm.
The four guiding principles of activity. So that's what the lotus is. When it's moving through the mud, it's like swayed this way and that way, but it keeps moving toward the light, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that it opens above the surface of the water, about a foot above, and then there is somebody sitting there. See? So that's the basis for being reborn there, that kind of concentration on the light, not being swayed by the wholesome and unwholesome. Concentration on the light, that's the symbolism. So he said, some people have the power to be born in a lotus, in Amitabha's Pure Land, but the lotus doesn't open because they don't have the aspiration to hear teaching.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Just imagine that, eh? Yeah, great. Shit! What a beautiful imagery. I love that imagery.
Mm.
I just think it's so beautiful. So you could, you know, you could be in one of those really ideal spots, but your lotus could be closed.
Better luck next time.
Oh, huh.
Well, back to the human realm to get the question going, right?
Or the aspiration. Probably the question was there, but the sense of the strong enough feeling that it could come to one. You know, that sense of being connected, maybe the guru or the aspiration, that personal feeling that it's possible, confidence, something like that. Interesting. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
I remember when Karma Chinle first came over, the Lama was the first wave of Tibetans that changed hands, and Rinpoche put them up, Karma Chinle, the Lama, at his house. And he spoke a little bit, and then he just held, I think it's all just like this, and he held his hand out, and closed it, and raised it, and opened it again, and said, more. But his whole being was so, I can't convey how everybody's brain sort of laid back and opened up. And relaxed, opened it, and then integrating it. And he didn't have to say a word.
How beautiful.
I was sitting on a park bench with him, two wooden boards, And as he was talking, the board was roaming, right? So the whole board was vibrating.
Uh-huh.
The pigeons could hear him and walk around. But then there was the whole board just vibrating on my back.
So right now, vibrating in your heart is a beautiful gold light. Just vibrates right through your body, pours out your pores everywhere, above, below, in front, behind. Right, left, four quarters, it just moves through the entire province. Anyone you want to pray for? Any circumstance? Just imagine the gold light just bathing. Like Satya, like anybody you want. You think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, others, less suffered. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, others, less suffered. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, others, less suffered. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. And look, we did one paragraph. Two paragraphs. We're charging ahead. I would like to cover this next bit because it's helpful when you're reading Buddhism to understand just the next bit to page... page 52, so it's actually just page 40, bit of 48, 49, 50, and 51, that's it. And then let's start the sutras. After that.